The following is a true story, except for the ending, which just hasn't happened yet. This is Escape from Provo Canyon.
So, I've stood my ips, and I'm settling into my new life as like a Provo Twain brain. A well-heeled Twain brain, but, you know, nonetheless. I am back in school. I got a French class with Wheeze, which is cool. You know, helps pass the time, but weekends and long-term are just fucking brutal. I mean, just like rancid tedium. No cool new tapes from Wheeze, you know, nor a boombox to play them on. No Candyland, you know, no TV playing soap operas with the sound off. Just sheer fucking boredom. And it's designed that way. The only privilege that I'm afforded is snacks and kitchen duty. I am allowed to request books from the library. And I remember I took out like a French grammar book, you know, kill an entire Sunday, you know, just conjugating verbs. My peers in long term, you know, we are, you know, a forlorn and strange bunch. There's one guy who claims to have mastered the art of astral projection, and he has this flock who he teaches, you know, how to send their consciousness out of their body. I try it, you know, maybe I went somewhere, I don't know. But we all end up back in long term, you know, so what's the fucking point? There's another kid, Bryson, who's a dead ringer for Gene Shalit, like that wild-looking film critic dude who has, like, anyone considered is also, like, a dead ringer for, like, the Welcome Back Cotter dude. I think, what was his name? Like, Gabe Kaplan. But anyways, like, Bryson is on a mission to rid himself of these love handles. And so he does these side-to-side bends, like, endlessly, you know, in an effort to burn off the baby fat. But none of it seems to be working. Kitchen duty on Fridays is a little bit of a respite. I'm teamed up with a kid, a court order named Robert from Florida. The Grimace dragged him in after I had escaped. Robert made it up to Unit 2 before flaming out. Like some kid, I don't know, like insulted his BMX bike or something, you know. Alloy handlebars and seat posts on a Schwinn. That's lame, you know.
Fuck you!
And then, of course, like fisticuffs, and you know, he got thrown down to long term. But Robert, you know, he asked me about my escape, and, you know, I tell him what I can. I mean, everybody, especially in long term, everybody's starving for a good story. You know, something, you know, just anything, you know, distract us from, you know, our shit reality. Yeah, at first I refrain. I mean, the Grimace has me under a gag order. So, you know, not much in it for me. But I don't know. With Robert, you know, he just had a way of kind of getting me to open up, I guess. And I'm glad I did. You know, like one Friday, you know, we're scrubbing pans. And he's asking me, he's like, hey, you know, is it really true, you know, you played a show in the auditorium? And I'm like, yeah, you know, I convinced the Grimace, you know, to let me jam out with these two guys, John and Bernie. And he's like, yeah, I don't know them. And I'm like, you know, hey, they must have terminated like while I was out. Terminate, that is Provo's like technical lingo for when they finally have to let you out. You know, release the teen back into the wild. But, you know, Provo, which is a business, you know, with owners and shareholders, it can only be compelled to release you, you know, and the cash flows generated by, you know, your incarceration in one of three ways. Either through the direction of the courts, if you're a court order, or your parents, or if you turn 18, which is apparently like what happened to John, you know. You know, no cake or candles, you know, just the Grimace, you know, opening the door through which old Johnny walked out, you know, a free punk. But so anyway, you know, Robert's like, no way. So you guys really did play the show. He's like, hey, but I can't believe the Grimace, you know, would allow something like that. And I'm like, yeah, I know, totally. But, you know, you gotta understand, like at the time, like the Grimace, you know, he was in a bad way. You know, and I tell Robert, you know, about how the Grimace screwed up Daryl's meds and sent him to the hospital. And I'm like, yeah, you know, like there was this one like cool therapist guy, who actually fucking quit. And Robert's like, oh, yeah, Warren. And I'm like, yeah, Warren. Like, how do you know him? And Robert's like, he's been talking to like a bunch of us. He's filing some lawsuit or something. I don't know. And then fucking Robert blindsides me. He's like, yeah, I have his number. And he pulls out like a scrap of paper. And on it is scribbled Warren and the fucking digits. And so I'm just like sitting there tripping out. And this hotel kid comes in, you know, and he's wearing a red coat. And he just starts stamping down like a stack of pizza boxes. And then he calls out to the cook, who takes his keys and opens the door, to which the hotel kid takes the pizza boxes and tosses them in a dumpster that's pushed up against the fence. And inside my brain, it was like making a fucking like Reese's peanut butter cup. It's like, you got Warren's phone number. I got a loaded snack account. Tommy's got a red coat and the cook's got the keys. And like a shot goes through me. I'm like, that is my fucking opening. So Robert and I, we hatched a plan. And like all good escape plans, you know, you start off with like a diversion, you know. Something like where, you know, the secret agent sets up a charge that explodes and all the goons go running off in that direction, you know. Like we wanted something like that. But to pull that off, you know, we had to recruit, like, you know, our team, you know, like the Dirty Dozen. But, you know, with long-termers our home unit, you know, we got plenty of talent to choose from, you know. That's like, you know, home to Provo's teenage detritus, you know. Like, guys with tons of hate and, like, nothing to lose. And so Robert, like, he takes the lead on developing, like, the team or the assets, as they say in, like, you know, statecraft. And this is how it all went down. First off, there's Randalls. And Randalls is this guy who has a beef with a dude named Marshall, who's this kiss-ass hotel fuck who ratted him out for, like, partying and making out with some chick during a home visit. You know, probably jealous or something, but whatever. Randalls fell from grace, like, all the way from hotel down to long-term. And so Robert and I, we get Randalls to agree to sucker punch Marshall in the school area. And I'm not proud of it. Well, yeah, I kind of am, actually, because it was a fucking great idea. You know, we figured Marshall, you know, he'll hit the carpet, and then the two will start to grapple. And then, like, you know, a crowd's gonna form. But that's not enough, you know? And so now it's Bryson's turn. And as you recall, Bryson's the kid with the love handles, but, like, since he's kind of given up on the side bend. So, you know, he's got some time on his hands. And so we convince Bryson, like, right when Randalls and Marshall, like, hit the carpet and the crowd forms, Bryson pulls the fire off. So now, you know, we've crafted a pretty sweet diversion, you know, like a real mayhem Sunday. But the cherry on top, we saved that for dinner. So now we got Randalls and Marshall, you know, grappling on the carpet and, like, the fire alarm's blaring. And hopefully the sprinkler's, like, going as well. But this is going to trigger, for sure, like, senior staff down there in the school area, resulting in the Grimace and his goons, you know, swarming in, you know, to break up the fight, and, well, the fucking fire alarm's blaring, so someone's head's going to roll. And in this case, Daryl's, but not so fast, because he's got a fire extinguisher, and so he's going to, like, blast the Grimace. And, like, keep blasting him, like, until he ends up looking like that one girl on the album cover, Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass, is like whipped cream and other delights or something. Now, like, why would Randalls and Bryson and Daryl, like, all agree to create this diversion for us in the first place? Like, I mean, each offense is going to get them, you know, a few days standing ips, like, minimum. Like, what could, you know, the Count of Monte Provo possibly offer in exchange? And it turns out, you know, like, the store of value, you know, the unit of account, or like the medium of exchange, it was fucking candy. It took us about a week to drain my snack account. You know, like, every night it was just like, you know, all right, guys, you know, take what you need.
Give me 3 boxes of Junior Mints.
A Snickers.
3 Musketeers.
Starburst.
Some of those Rolos.
How many? All of them.
$100,000 bar?
So, you know, like, that was the idea, at least. But the trick is, you know, it's all got to pop, like, at the same time. In our case, Friday, kitchen duty, 5 p.m. So, Friday rolls around and it's kitchen duty. And there's Robert and I, you know, scrubbing away, taunted by some pizza munching, you know, hotel fucks. And Robert and I, we leave the kitchen and go out into the dining room and start, you know, breaking down these pizza boxes. And like all the hotel kids are like, oh, you know, Joe and Robert, you know, they're like helping us out, okay. And so all the while, you know, we're stamping on these boxes, we've got our eye on this big clock, like up on the wall. And all of a sudden, the minute hand like snaps true north. It's 5 o'clock. Robert and I stop breaking down the pizza boxes and we're both just like staring at the clock, you know, watching the seconds hand, you know, sweep past the 3, you know, down towards the 6, now heading up towards the 9. And it's like, fuck, you know, now we're almost like a minute in. It's like, no, fuck, man. Like what, like wet fuse? And then we hear it. Senior staff down by the school area. Hotel goons rush out. Robert and I go up to these two hotel fucks and we're like, give me your coat. Robert's wrenching his off of this one kid and he gives the other one like this full on like, give Jow your fucking coat or I'll kick your fucking ass. Robert and I throw on the red coats and we go into the kitchen. We toss a pile of dish towels into a rubber garbage can. Robert calls out to the cook, who grabs his keys and opens the door. Robert and I hoist the rubber trash can and we're fucking out. We run to the dumpster, wrap our hands with the dish towels, put the can on its side, jump on top of it, climb up the fence, over the razor wire, and bam, our feet touch the ground. And we just start fucking on. 5 minutes later, we sprint into this strip mall parking lot, and like next to a convenience store, there's a payphone. Robert grabs the receiver and he's digging his pockets and he grabs Warren's number and he's like, hey man, like got any change? And I'm like, Robert, dude, like, you know, like he still thinks I'm like Provost Count of Monte Cristo. And I was, but like those were like just snack credits, you know, like redeemable only at Provost Candy Store. And fuck it, you know, we blew through that fortune, like financing that diversion. So what, you know? So I just punched the 0 on the dial pad. I'm like, fucking Robert, you know, get the operator, place a fucking collect call. So as I'm catching my breath in my mind, I pull out my own protractor. You know, I'm drawing my own circle. And I throw a ring around, you know, Robert and me and Provo, which is right down the road. I'm thinking, like, the grimace may or may not be, like, fucking covered in whipped cream. But one thing's for sure, like, he's got his protractor out as well. Which means his goons are on the way. And our clock has started ticking. Robert hangs up and he's like, dude, Warren's not answering. And I'm like, you sure you got the fucking number right? And he's like, yeah, I got the fucking number right. Look at it, it's written right fucking here. Yeah, I know it's fucking written right there, but it's written by you. And so as we're sitting there just screaming at each other, some mom pulls up with like 2 kids. And it's like, don't fucking maintain. And so we like flash these, you know, like tight, but you know, fake smiles. But like Robert, you know, his ankles are bouncing like a mofo. And me, you know, like with my rubber duck yellow hairdo and fucking and red hotel coat, like both of us, we just look cagey as fuck. The mom looks us up and down and like sweeps her kids around her. And as soon as we're inside the store, I'm like, Robert, dude, like we gotta fucking move. So now we're like running fucking wild on the streets of Provo, like, you know, dodging cars and like people are fucking staring. We ditch down a side street that dumps us onto a dirt road that runs along a field. And by now we're gassed, you know, after having sprinted over just like a fucking quarter mile. And it's like starting to get dark, you know, clouds are brooding on the horizon, like any second it's gonna start raining. We start running again, which slows into like, you know, a jog and then to like, you know, like a fast walk. And we're both looking around and it's like we are completely exposed, you know, on this fucking country road to nowhere. Robert pulls up and he's just like, dude, like, where are we going? And I remember just like fucking hanging my head, you know, like, dude, I don't know. I don't know. And then I remember looking up and seeing in the field this barn. And I'm like, Robert, over there. So we rush across a field, you know, trying to keep a low silhouette, and then hop a fence and squeeze in between like a bunch of sheep, you know, who start like bleeding. And so I'm like, you know, patting their backs, like trying to shush them, which of course does no good. And I will say as like a quick aside, like have you ever touched a sheep? Like, I mean, appropriately, but I mean, they're weird. Like they're wool. It's got this strange texture. It's like kind of soft, but spongy. It's like a loaf of Wonder Bread. God, fuck. I remember like tripping out on that for a second. So anyways, we get through the sheep and into the barn and climb up a ladder into a hayloft. And like, as we're catching our breath, it starts to rain and Robert starts to cry. Now, this is my second escape, you know, so I'm used to kind of shit going wrong, you know, you gotta think on the fly, you know, improvise. But, you know, fucking Robert's crying, like, I felt responsible, like maybe I'd coaxed him into a stupid move, you know, and any minute now, you know, fucking we'd be busted, you know, which would suck, you know, but me, you know, I'm turning 18 in January, so hey, you know, fuck, at least I tried. But Robert, he had just turned 16, so, you know, the stakes for him were much higher, you know, the fucking Grimace could keep him for another 2 years. So we're crouching up in his hayloft, and the rain is pounding on the roof, and all of a sudden I hear the sheep start bleeding again, and the barn door opens. I'm like, fuck, you know, and I peer on the edge of the loft, and I see it's some farmer dude. And Robert's like, he's like, dude, what's going on? I'm like, it's the farmer, man. He's like, what's he doing here? And I'm like, I don't know, man, he's the fucking farmer. And so now Robert's jabbering away like we've already been caught, but like somehow between like the rain pounding on the barn and like the sheep, like the guy didn't hear shit. He just grabbed like 2 feed bags and he leaves. And now all I'm thinking is like, we gotta keep moving. You know, but now it's dark and, you know, well, but maybe that's in our favor, you know, but it's raining, you know, okay, that sucks, but maybe it's good too. Like, fuck, I don't know. And then I look through a slit in the barn siding and across the other side of the field, I see this like big modern house, which is strange for Provo because, you know, most of the houses we ran past, they were like these sort of, you know, quaint, you know, like American Gothic style, you know, like white picket fences, gable roofs, you know, dormer windows. But not this one. It's like fully modern, you know, just like a glass box. And it's all lit up, which like, you know, is that good or bad, you know? But something inside of me, like instinctively nudges me. And I'm like, Robert, let's go. So we climb down the ladder, you know, and push through the sheep, and they just fucking haul ass across the field. And now we're standing at the front of the door, and we're like bathed in light, you know, which of course is like horrible positioning. But through the window, I can see a middle-aged couple like sitting on a couch watching TV. And on the screen, I recognize, I'm like, hey, that's fucking Ronald Reagan. So yeah, they're watching the 1984 presidential debate. So I ring the doorbell and I see the guy get up off the couch. And like, as he's walking towards the door, you know, Robert's looking at me like, you know, like, fuck, what, you know? And like, all I can do is kind of shrug back because like, I got no fucking plan. Like, we just got to keep shit going. So the guy, he opens the door. And in that instance, like, I like shapeshift.
Hello, we are foreign exchange students from France, and we are lost, and our host did not come to meet us, and, like,
I don't fucking know, it, like, it just came to me. And so, like, now the wife comes to the door, and she's just, like, as sweet as can be, and she's like, oh, look at you two, you're all wet, poor things, get in here. And so, like, you know, Robert and I, like, we scoot inside, and it's all like, you boys hungry? And I'm like, no, we just have to call our friend Warren. We have a meeting today, we're supposed to come, but he did not come. And so I'm just, like, you know, blathering away, pretending to be some, you know, French foreign exchange student. And all the while, like, you know, kind of like pulling Robert away from that large bay window he's standing right in front of, you know? And so I see their phone, like, you know, mounted on the wall. And I'm like, can I use it, you know? And she's like, oh, yes, yes. And then I turn to Robert. I'm like, Robert, le numéro. And he's like, you know, what? I'm like, the number to Warren, you know? And he's like, he finally gets it. He gives me the fucking number. So I'm on the phone, you know, ring, ring. And I hear a voice. And it's like, hello? And I'm like, hello, is this Warren? And he's like, yes. And I'm like, Warren, it's Geoffroy and Robert. So good to hear from you. But what happened? You know, we were waiting for you, but we could not find you. And he's like, sorry, who is this? And I'm like, it's Geoffroy and Robert. We are really glad to see you, but you never came to the place you said you were going to come to see us, but you did not come. And he's like, excuse me, who is this? And you know, he's just not getting it. But, you know, all I can do is blather on because, like, the missus is, like, right there staring at me, you know? So, like I cover the receiver. I'm like, I have a very thick accent. He can't understand me. And she's like, you know, that's okay, hon. Give me the phone and I'll talk to him. And I'm like, oh, no. 1 second. And she's like smiling at me, you know, like, and I just smile back and then bury the receiver in my shoulder. And like, sotto voce, I'm like, Warren, it's Zhao. I escaped from Provo Canyon. Come get me. And an hour later, like Robert and I, we're in Warren's house, you know, on his couch, wrapped in blankets, like fucking snug as bug. And I'm out, you know, again, like, I'm exhilarated, like, Robert and I, like, we're the fucking champs, you know? You know, we're singing our own praises, like, oh, we fucking planned it all. Well, we did, I mean, half at least, but fuck, it all worked out. You know, my faith in, you know, let it rip and universe shall deliver, you know, has been restored. You know, I'm back to quoting album covers. But what for us is an adventure, like, to Warren, is a gross injustice, like, all we want to talk about is how my friends back in Saratoga are going to love the Frenchy thing and it's classic, you know? And like all Warren wants to talk about is how hateful and abusive everything is back in Provo. You know, we see ourselves as heroes. Warren sees us like as victims. So that evening, you know, Warren gets a pizza delivered. Turns out hotel's not the only way to get pizza night. And, you know, and he sits us down and he tells us, he's like, guys, I've been in contact with the ACLU. And, you know, we're like, the ACL who? And he's like, the American Civil Liberties Union, you know, which is an organization that, like, I didn't know existed. And so Warren explains to us, yeah, it's a bunch of lawyers who sue institutions that violate people's rights. You know, institutions like Provo. And we're like, yeah, right on, man. And he's all, they sue institutions like Provo on behalf of victims, like you. And we're like, yeah, right on, you know? And he can kind of tell that, you know, we're not really getting it or like, you know, what? You know, we have rights, who, me? You know, it's like, yes, you. I'm like, well, all right, you know? Yes, you have rights, and Provo and the Grimace in particular have tread on those rights, you know? And now we're like, okay. And it was weird because like I'd always consider myself at the mercy of adults because I'm a minor. But now I'm learning that, you know, even lowly minors like me, you know, have rights. And now like Robert and I are like, we're getting riled. You know, it's like, bring us this Grimace. We'll box his ears. And, you know, Warren's like, all right, cool down, guys. You know, there'll be no boxing of ears. But I have set up an interview with the local TV news tomorrow. So, you know, you guys can tell your story. Which is a story he gives to us. You know, Provo bad, psychological, physical abuse. Like, and we're so riled, we're like, abuse, children eaten, you know, the Grimace eats children. Ah! And Warren's like, no, seriously, guys, but I do want you to talk about, you know, the abuse you've suffered. And I remember like thinking like, you know, I haven't really suffered abuse much. I mean, but he presses and he's like, well, you know, you were kidnapped and thrown into solitary, you know, confinement and forced to stare at a wall for hours on end. So, I mean, don't you consider that abuse? And I think about it, and the weird thing is, maybe it's my personal makeup, I don't know. I had like a Vedic astrologer read my chart once, and she's like, you're a swate or something like that, swete, which are these incredibly easygoing and sweet creatures. So who knows? But I thought about what Warren was saying, you know, abuse. And to be honest, I just wouldn't put it that way, you know? Like, gnarly? Like, hairy? Scary? Sure, but I don't know. Abusive? I don't know. Maybe I've got a high tolerance. Maybe for all the shit I'd pulled, I felt like I deserved some punishment. The worst thing was not knowing what the punishment was going to be. But once I knew, it was just about, you know, enduring. And I could endure Provo. I could endure standing ips for 8 hours. I could endure the grimace. Didn't want to, but I could. And I did. But, you know, and what did I care? That was the past. You know, I was out. But Warren, you know, he was relentless. He was on a mission. You know, here's an adult mental health worker telling you you've been psychologically abused. But I still didn't believe it. You know, I was out. I'm fine. But fuck it, you know. He's supplying pizza night. So, you know, I go along with it. I mean, any opportunity to stick it to Provo and to the Grimace, personally. I'm in. The next morning, Warren drives us to some parking lot. I don't know exactly where it was. Maybe in like a strip mall or something like that. But there's a local TV van and this reporter, you know, a dude with like a full-on sports coat and like TV hair, you know, like, where'd you get that jacket? he's got a camera guy, you know, and he sets up the shot, you know, Robert and me, like we're swept off to the side behind Warren, you know, our savior. And the reporter, you know, tees things up, something dramatic like,
accusations of child abuse at the local school, right down the road here.
And the camera guy zooming in on Robert and me for like reaction shots. And me, I'm like, what, right, did he, right down the road from here? And I'm like, what do you say we move this thing into the studio? Like, we're a little exposed out here. But anyway, like, the reporter throws it to Warren, who just goes, like, he just goes full on, like, Emily Zola. Provo, j'accuse, le grimace, j'accuse aussi, you know? And the reporter dude lets Warren, you know, finish his indictment. And then he shifts it up. He's like,
we have two kids who have somehow managed to escape.
And he puts the mic in my face and he's like, tell us, like, why did you escape? And I'm thinking why did I escape? Like no, man, like how? Like the escape was rad. Like dude, that's good TV. But then, you know, I just fall into, you know, telling the guy, you know, well, all of Provo, Utah. Well, you know, the Grimace kidnapped me and how he strip searched me. And I spent 3 weeks in intake and I'm, you know, it's all very breezy, kind of matter of fact, because, you know, I want to fast forward to the part where we escape, you know, I want to come off as cool, like. I'm Steve McQueen, you know, the cooler king. But this reporter dude, you know, he's a story guy and he knows what he's doing. And he's like, wait, you were kidnapped? I'm like, yeah. He's like, by whom? And I'm like, well, the Grimace. He's like, the Grimace? Tell us about this Grimace. You know, and I'm trying to make light of it. I'm like, well, you know, he's this fucking dude. He's like, weighs like 250 pounds. He's shaped like a pear, you know, and always wears the same purple t-shirt, you know. And the guy leans in, he's like, 250 pound Grimace man. And this Grimace, he strip searched you? And I'm like, yeah, you know. Anyways, and he's like, hold on, now tell us. Like, how did that feel? And I'm like, I don't know. It's like, it felt fucking kind of, you know, gross. And like, all of a sudden, my throat bubbles in spasms. Because I want to cry. And in that moment, I just really fucking hated the Grimace. Like, I just fucking loathed him. Like, as much as anyone could loathe another, I just fucking loathed him. I loathed his flashlight, his fucking keys, his fucking walkie-talkie, his purple tent size polo.
Audio preview.
Like to me, the Grimace was Provo personified. Well, not personified, like he wasn't even a fucking person. He's just a fucking dick. So that evening, the first person I call, it's not Matt, it's not Hank, it's Sally. Like, I don't know, the excitement of the escape, mixed with like the reporter dude kind of, you know, messing with my head and my heart. I just felt like with Sally, like I could relate. But also, you know, I needed counsel, you know? I mean, like I might have the jump on the Grimace, but I've just revealed my coordinates to some degree. So like, you know, where to now, you know? You know, like maybe that magical deck of cards of hers can point the way. So I make the call and Sally picks up and she's so rad. She's like, hey, you know, stay put, kid. You know, I'll work on flying you out. And like an hour later, she calls back and she's got a ticket waiting for me at the American Airlines counter up in Salt Lake City. So that evening, we take off for the airport. You know, Warren's driving and his girlfriend's in shotgun. And Robert and I, we're in the back. The poor guy's made some calls to Florida, you know, but he hasn't sorted anything out yet. So, you know, he's along for the ride. Warren turns onto a thoroughfare, and up ahead, I can see a big sign. It's like 15 North. And as he takes the on-ramp, you know, like, I'm like, fucking, like, right on, you know, fucking home free, you know, again. And then, poof, a spotlight floods the inside of the car. We're surrounded by cops. I watch Warren and his girlfriend, you know, get handcuffed and stuffed into the back of a black and white. Just like, you know, Adam and Matt back in Irvine. I'm really racking up the collateral damage here. Inside the black rental, like, Robert's fucking freaked. Not so much that he's been caught and is, like, thus royally fucked, but because, like, the Grimace and I, like, we're in, like, a standoff. You know, like those battle cats on Instagram. It's just like one flinch and it's on. The Grimace, he's pissed. Not least because of the escape, you know, and hopefully for, you know, having had Daryl blast him with the fire extinguisher. But like I described him unflatteringly, you know, as the Grimace on live TV. Oh, and by the way, like he ain't wearing the purple polo. He's in camo. And me, you know, I'm so pissed. If it weren't for the handcuffs, like, I'd take his flashlight and shine it up his fucking ass. But we hang fire, you know, just staring, you know, like, seething at each other. But, like, the hate I had for him, it's somehow, like, stronger. And I think it freaks him out a bit. So, 15 minutes later, you know, we roll past that idiotic half pipe. Provo really was just down the road from the place we did the interview. As opposed to my first escape where I was out for like 2.5 months, this time, you know, I've been out for just 3 days, which is still pretty good. First place for the first escape, you know, for time spent on the lam. But, you know, blue ribbon for the second one. I mean, if anything, just for the execution. But, you know, fuck it. What can I say, you know? Same old scene. Frog march through intake, through long term, and down the dark corridor where the Grimace throws me in solitary. I can hear Robert in the other cell, you know, crying. I feel really bad for him. Inside me, my heart has become, you know, just like a fucking cold stone that just pumps hate for the fucking Grimace. Another trial, another sentence, this time much faster, much harsher, about 5 weeks of IPS. But it turns out I only stand 2 days worth. 10 o'clock next morning, I'm an investment, nose 2 inches from the wall, perfect structure. And what do I hear? Senior staff dial 9. I just ignore it, you know. Maintain structure. But 20 minutes later, the Grimace and his goon squad march like a gang of kids down the long corridor towards Solitary. That evening after dinner, Long-Term's resident goon tells me, "You got a visitor." It turns out it's Tim Tubbs, and he wants to have a chat. Back at his cubbyhole, guess who's waiting? It's the Grimace. And now normally there's a Chinese wall between the goons and the therapist offices, but not today. He just stands there, sort of staring at the carpet. And Tubbs starts in, he's like,
"Jeffrey, we're very disappointed in you."
And I'm like, "Oh, you are, Well, like, tell me something I don't fucking know." And then he does. It turns out that big gang of kids that the Grimace and the Goon Squad, hauled down to Solitary, that was a mass escape attempt. And Tubbs says, "Dale thinks your recent exploits have incited this attempt." And I look at the Grimace, and I'm like, "Dale?" Like, it turns out the Grimace's name is Dale. like, why is that weird? I don't know, but fuck. And so I'm sitting there, tripping out that, my boogeyman has a name, and it's Dale. And then Tubbs lays it on me. He's like, "Jeffrey, we've talked with your father, and he's agreed that it's best for everyone if you terminate." And so, just as at Saratoga High, I was kicked out of Provo for essentially cutting class. The next morning, I remember waking up in Long Term and taking that first big breath of the day and feeling like this immense, glorious lightness in my chest. I only remember feeling like that once before in my life. I was 7 years old and it was summer vacation. And I woke up surrounded by all my stuffed animals. I used to collect them, I had an entire zoo, a dolphin, a panda, a tigger whose neck was broken, for me squeezing it because I loved him so. This was my adolescent tribe. And waking up that summer day, my little lungs filling with that first breath of the day and the oxygen just, turning into blood, pushing into my system. And feeling like this vibrant, pure little organism, ready to rage, innocently, because, I knew no wrong. A beautiful piece of adolescent wildlife. And waking up in that bunk bed in that dark dungeon that is Long Term, that's how good I felt. Because I knew that after breakfast at Cafe Cynique, Dale was going to take his keys and open the door and release me back into the wild. My name is Jeffrey Jow Folkerth, Provo inmate number 196, and this has been my Tale of Woe.
smoker.